Get ready for some fun. This is Malcolm and You Know Who with Malcolm Out Loud. Open-minded discussion that's truthful, respectful, and direct. This is real life on the brink of greatness.
Well, I keep hearing from folks that it's very un-American if we don't lie down and let immigration run rampant in our country. Very un-American. And what I keep hearing them say is, you know, we were founded as immigrants, and my mother, my father, my grandfather, they did this. We were immigrants, and we need to let everyone in, and it's our obligation. Keep our borders open, let everybody in, and that's the American way. It's our duty. Blah, 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 blah. It's Malcolm Out Loud. Welcome. Immigration's a real problem, both legal and illegal. And it's something that, for a lot of years, I think a lot of people just tuned it out, didn't think it was going to matter. But I think this is a real problem. It's going to impact your quality of life. Everybody that's listening, it's going to impact your quality of life. It's going to impact wherever you live, doesn't matter, wherever you live in this country, it's going to impact your quality of life. It's going to impact your kids' quality of life, your children and your grandchildren. It's going to impact their quality of life even more so. Your children and grandchildren, it's going to greatly impact their life. I'm sure of it. Well, you know, we only hear, again, a little bit of the sound bites on this, but, you know, you all know this was a big talking point in the presidential election, and Donald Trump called for a temporary halt to the admission of all Muslims from abroad. And wow, everybody was aghast at that. Whether as immigrants or as visitors, and you could hear the oohs and the ahs. It was, is he really saying that? Yeah, well, was this an idiotic proposal from Trump, or was it brilliant? Well, I want to bring you to an interview recently with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press NBC and our Secretary of State, John Kerry. Chuck Todd says, you've spent a lot of time with a lot of diplomats from around the world. What's been their reaction to Donald Trump's proposal to temporarily ban Muslim immigration into the United States, is what Chuck Todd asked Secretary of State John Kerry. Kerry's response, well, those people who know the United States well are quite shocked because they see it as totally contrary to American values. Remember that, folks, American values. I'll come back to that in a minute. As discriminatory and, frankly, as potentially dangerous in that it seems like a person running for president of these United States is doing well in the polls, is prepared to take actions that would, in fact, ratify the notion that people are at war against Islam and not the ISIS folks. And so I think you have to be very careful just by categorizing people by being Muslim, that it's discrimination and it is contrary, I think, to the fundamental values of our country, the Secretary of State said. And he wrapped it up by saying, we have plenty of ways to vet people. We already do it. We have a huge process of examining people for visas. We know who's coming into our country for the most part. My friends, that is nothing but a bold-faced lie. Bold-faced lie. The Secretary of State just out and outright lied to the American people. Just total lies, total propaganda, lies, lies, lies. We have no idea who's coming into our country. We don't have a clue. Legally, illegally, specifically, and the border's only one piece of it. That's only one piece of it. I mean, we got people in and out on visas. We got things going on. We can't track all of this going on now. We've got, they're infiltrating all different means they're coming in. They're coming in on temporary visas. They're coming in by other means. And some of them are out on social media bragging about it. You know, we don't have any clue. He's wrong. We have no idea who is really coming into our country. So I don't know why he says that, where he gets that from. I don't really get it. And then this whole notion that, you know, it's discrimination and it is contrary, I think, to the fundamental values of our country. You know, this is where I think a lot of the political class, my friends, have taken it out of context. The fundamental values of our country. American values. What are the fundamental values of our country? What are the dangers of immigration? What are the dangers of illegal immigration, legal immigration? Yeah, we're a country that was founded on immigrants. Sure, sure. Almost 240 years ago. Sure. What does that mean today? Could our forefathers have predicted back then what we'd be faced with right now? And the fact that we always did it a certain way 200 years ago or 100 years ago, should that be the way we do it moving forward? Or do we get a chance to reevaluate things and take a look at where we're at right now and say, okay, this is a better strategy moving forward. This is the way we need to do things. Or just, it's always like, well, no, that's the way it's always been. That's the way we got to keep it. We can never change anything because, well, that's, you know, against the fundamental values of our country. My friends, the fundamental values of our country is our responsibility to our children, our grandchildren, our friends and our family and the people that we love and respect. And don't we have a responsibility to these people? What about our fundamental values to the people who are here in this country? And what does our country look like 50 years from now? What do we look like? It's not a pretty picture. Economically, it's a disaster. That's if we get there. The safety and security is a whole nother set of problems. The world has evolved. The world has changed. America is on so many enemies lists around the world from many groups who want to do harm. America is that icon. It's that beacon of hope. It's that beacon of light. It is that image. America. And they see it out there. They see it. They see what America is. They see America is a nation of hope. America is a nation of ideals. America is a nation that has values. It's an exceptional nation. They know that. They also know that we fight with each other. I mean, our 24/7 news cycle, nothing's private here. It's like your family. You always knew what your Uncle John was out doing because, you know, it's like your drunk uncle. The politicians, they come across like your drunk Uncle John. We always know what the politician, because it's like they air their dirty laundry back and forth, the two political parties and the media. You see it on television, radio. You read it everywhere. It's on the internet. I mean, everybody knows the drunk Uncle John has been boozing it up. So they know our dirty life. They know the bad guys. They know how to get to us. They know what we're going to fight about. Well, that's the talking points today. We got a big show, big guest for you. Next, you'll meet one of the nation's leading authorities on immigration and the impact it's having on all of us. You'll know who on the other side of the break. Well, immigration is the topic this afternoon, and I'm so thrilled to have with me Dr. Steven Steinleit again, just perfect here, a senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. Now, Dr. Steinleit was on with me a couple years back on a show we had done, and I just think we hit it off really well, and you amazed me. You know, I've talked to a lot of people on immigration, Dr. Steinleit, but I don't think I've talked to anybody smarter than you on this topic, by the way. How's that?
That is music to my ears. I mean, I'm already a legend in my own mind.
I'm just buttering you up ahead of time, so you know.
So you can whack me very hard.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Hey, man, there's always a reason, a rhyme and a reason, right? So, well, let me just tell folks that Dr. Steinleit, again, is one of the nation's leading authorities on immigration trends, policy, and the politics behind it all. He is also concerned with the nexus between immigration and national security. Of course, in this age of terrorism, this jihadist terrorism we're all facing, and you know the migration again of the Muslim population to Europe and the United States is a big conversation today. He's written on the refugee policy, another big news item. So let's get started here, and I want to start here. You know, I told the folks, Dr. Steinleit, in the first earlier part of the show, that it's come to my sense that, you know, we're hearing for people that it's very un-American if we don't lie down and let immigration run rampant in our country. That this is what I sense now, that somehow if you want to secure the borders or have any security or safety in the country, or you against any refugees coming in, that you are un-American, you're unpatriotic. And that's what I'm hearing from folks, that, okay, we're founded as immigrants, we're always supposed to take everybody and whoever. And what's wrong with that narrative today, Doctor?
Well, I think what's wrong with that narrative is that it's for the most part based on nostalgia and a misplaced sentimentalism about people's own families' immigrant experience. And you know, it's certainly the case that if we rule out a few groups, like the settlers, like Native Americans, like Africans, almost all of us who came here came as immigrants. And so, look, Americans cherish immigration, but they cherish legal immigration. And immigration also made great sense at a different time in our nation's history. You know, it's not so much that the immigrants are different, it's that we are different.
Well, the whole world is different. I mean, security, policies, everything's different today than it was 100 years ago, right?
And you think of the North American continent that we're living on. If we look at during the period of the great waves of immigration from Europe between 1840s and 1924, this country was the industrial colossus of the earth. It was like five Chinas. And we needed all the immigrants we could get, low-skilled, semi-skilled, highly skilled, and we had a pathway through the auto industry, the steel industry, the textile industry, for people to move up the ladder and get into the middle class. We needed tremendous numbers of small farmers, and they came from Italy, from Ireland, from Scandinavia, from Germany, to feed that growing population, and we had an empty continent to fill. That's just not the case anymore. And mass immigration becomes a problem also when we have a welfare state, which wasn't the case
then. Well, right. You have the economic conditions that you know we've talked about before and we'll talk about again, but you also have the real security and safety threat. And, you know, again, I talked to folks in the first part, I told them the quality of life. If you care for your quality of life, if that's important to you, then this topic should very well be important to everybody. Nobody should ignore this or poo-poo the talk about, I think both legal immigration and illegal immigration, both are something important we need to discuss in this country.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I don't think we can separate them. I mean, I think it's fair that most Americans feel there's a certain, you know, our sense of fair play makes us angry about illegal immigration. Americans aren't xenophobic, and they don't dislike people from Mexico, say. It's got nothing to do with that. Amen. Americans, you know, we figured out we're a very diverse country, and if you play by the rules, things will work. So, you know, you keep your place in line and think, you know, you play by the rules. Most of the studies that have been done, by the way, show no evidence of xenophobia at all. I mean, it's played up by...
Well,
proponents.
Well, Dr. Stanley, one of the things I don't agree and I don't really understand is, you know, how is it that, you know, that the politicians and that they think it's acceptable to just keep open borders and let people come in at will? And here's the thing. We have a set of laws in this country. What I can't comprehend is, why don't we enforce the laws? Why are we not enforcing the laws on immigration? And I don't see that happening. I mean, we need a new immigration policy, but we're not even covering the one we have now, are we?
No, not at all. And in fact, the solution to this problem, the ultimate solution, it's not, you know, to use the old phrase, rocket science. It comes down to exactly what you said, Malcolm. It's enforcing the laws. I don't want to see any new legislation coming out of Congress, because I know what that legislation will have. We'll have bogus guest worker programs, because guest workers will never go home. It's going to increase enormously the legal amount of low-skill immigration. The fact is, we've got lots of good laws on the books. The problem is, we have an administration, and I mean, I don't want to sound partisan here, but it is a problem. It was also a problem under Bush, by the way. But we have an administration that really set out to destroy the effectiveness of the immigration supervisory agencies. And that includes the Border Patrol, which was told, don't bother arresting people because we're not going to do anything with them. The agents who work for ICE, you know, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, right now, ICE agents are told, when they report to work from home, go to the gym, we don't even want you here, because their job is to arrest and deport people. And that's not, quite frankly, what the Obama administration wants.
Right.
And the people at USCIS who check visas, which, to put it mildly, is a hugely important thing in terms of national security, the ones who flag the most problems, that is to say, the ones who are most diligent, are very often demoted or transferred. So, you know, the people who try to do the good jobs suffer, and the people who go along with this kind of anarchic regime they're either rewarded or just left alone.
Well, and you talk about the current administration, then you mentioned the Bush administration, and I'll be frank with you. I mean, you could go back over the last 20, 30 years, and, you know, there's been such a lack of attention and immigration in this country that now we're at a point now where it's in a crisis mode, you know?
Historically, would be the greatest mistake that one group has made after another. I mean, you think President Reagan, who I know is an idol to many of my conservative friends, but you know, it was his amnesty. It's something like 3.86 million people that, in a sense, was kind of the mother load that began this. And, you know, supposedly the bill, the Simpson-Mazzoli bill, was going to have enforcement measures. But what we always find out with these big amnesties and these big immigration bills is that the enforcement never follows. The amnesties come, but there's no enforcement. And this is really what's plaguing the American people. Again, we need to enforce the law.
Well, I'm glad you point that out, that it happened. It's funny that you say, or odd that you say, it happened on Reagan's watch. Very interesting. It is somehow another, I think, Dr. Steinlight, we are misconstruing our passion and compassion in this country for stupidity. You know?
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, you know, the road to hell was paved with good intentions.
And that's exactly where we're at. Yeah, and we're on that road right now, by the way. That there's no doubt in my mind we're on that road. How important is it right now? We hear all this talk about the wall within the political spectrum and, you know, the presidential election and race. And, you know, we keep hearing about the wall is important. How important is it to protect our southern and northern borders, both of the borders, actually? How important is it, Dr. Steinlight?
Well, I think it's tremendously important. It seems to me the first priority of any president is to secure the lives and livelihoods of the American people, but their lives first. And we have a situation, certainly on our southern border, it's most obvious, that border is not only being crossed by tens of thousands of people looking simply to displace Americans in their jobs, but it's also being crossed, we know from reports from the Department of Homeland Security going back a decade, by tens of thousands of people from countries on the terrorist watch list. We know these people are in bed with the Mexican drug cartels, with the government of Venezuela. And by the way, in 2006, the Senate promised us they passed the Secure Fence Act. That fence goes 35 miles right now.
Right.
It's insanity.
It is insanity, yeah.
Listen, it's just simple insanity.
It is. We'll take a quick pause here. When we come back, I want to talk about the changing demographics of America, what we look like 50 years from now, the impact of the Syrian refugee as well. This is a real crisis in our country right this very moment, and there's a lot to talk about on him. We'll be right back with Dr. Steven Steinlight right after the break. Hey, welcome back. We're back with Dr. Steven Steinlight. I'm thrilled to have him with me. He's the senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. Find out more about him at cis.org, cis.org. It's a great site, actually. There's a lot of, it's a great blog site, a lot of different stories there from the board at CIS. And you've got some interesting people up there at the organization, Dr. Steinlight. I was reading some of the posts in the last couple of days, and, you know, it makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've never worked with a bunch of people I've liked as much. Everyone I work with is smart as a whip, and I think the nicest part is that people come from, you know, or have different political affiliations, have different ideological outlooks, but the fact is we all get along, and when it comes to this issue, getting this issue right, we are one effective team.
Well, the way you just said that, that's actually describes our country as well. We're all different people, all different beliefs, all different, you know, and that's, but we still need to come together to solve the big problem. So it's a great example of what your organization is. It's really what our country is and what our political spectrum is too. But if we don't come together and compromise and talk about these things, we're never going to solve them in this country. You know, Dr. Steinlight, there's a couple of components to immigration that are very serious that people need to understand. You have the economic component, the fact of the quality of life here is going to continue to disintegrate to the point that your children and your grandchildren are going to have a whole different quality of life as we look at this thing. You've got the security and safety measures, you've got terrorism on the rise, you've got the drug cartels, you got other people trying to break in, not to mention a lot of people who are breaking the law. and taken quality and jobs and everything else. And so it disturbs me when people use this whole passion conversation as sort of their catch-all for, you know, oh, it's okay, we can do this because we're America. I think it's starting to have a real impact on our psyche here in this country. This whole conversation and fighting about legal and illegal immigration. Take the Syrian refugee problem, for instance. Europe has been taking all these refugees well before Syria. I mean, the Muslim population in a lot of the Europe countries, including France, is astronomical. And you see the problems they're having out there. Now we're being put to the test and having our nose rubbed in it from not only the political policymakers in Washington, but other countries. Just this past couple of weeks, Canada took a bunch in and kind of did a whole news bulletin. And the prime minister was out there at the airport and he was greeting them and giving them health coverage and giving them things. And I mean, this has all become sort of a charade, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And the very, very serious undersides are being downplayed tremendously. And I'm glad to see, for example, during the Republican debate the other night, that they were out there, I think, really universally showing the darker side. You know, what we're talking about, first of all, is the fact that we are letting in at least the plan in this country. The president has spoken of 10,000, but I've also heard proponents of the refugee thing talking about bringing that number up to 200,000. And let us also remember that in the refugee policy, the engine that drives it is the same engine that drives immigration, and that is extended family reunification. So this thing is going to mushroom and grow. It's the same way we began with, actually, a rather small number of people who came from Somalia, most of them going to the Twin Cities and to Maine. Those numbers started out, I think, around 50,000. They're about 250,000 now.
The FBI, by the way, the FBI is tracking thousands of these people right now, by the way. They're on the list to track them. You know, because
that's correct, and they're going back. Many of them have gone back to fight for al-Shabaab, which is one of the leading Islamist terrorist organizations.
That's right.
We're importing a gigantic problem. And the numbers, the numbers are leaving aside the refugee population. I mean, the numbers of Muslims we're looking to bring in over the next a couple of years are something like 600,000 a year.
Right. No, I hear you. Let me do this.
But the bottom line is we can't vet anybody. This is the big problem.
Yeah, let's do this. In the next few minutes, let's do a kind of a round robin, go through some, I'll throw some quick things at you, give me some quick, and we'll try to cover a few things. Let's talk, first of all, I want to know from you specifically, this whole thing about building a wall on the southern border. Bottom line, is it doable or not? Yes or no?
Yes, it is. By wall, I mean, it doesn't matter what material we're talking about. We're talking about building a barrier that would pose a tremendous, that would be very difficult to get across. I would militarize that border as well.
As well as the northern border as well needs to be militarized, does it not?
Yes, it will obviously have to be done in a different fashion because it's a different kind of border, but yes, I would know it.
Well, because right now we got people coming across the northern border. As I, you know, say, the Veritas Project did several examples of that this year where they had people with masks come in on speedboats right through the Great Lakes, and they came right into the museums up there in the northern, in those states.
And some of them were wearing, I think, Osama bin Laden masks. If it were not terrifying, it would be funny.
Right, exactly. You're so right. I was horrified with the whole deal. All right, so this, let me move it now to the Syrian refugee deal. Is this something that we can take on in this country at this time?
No, and we have no responsibility to do so, and I want to really underscore that.
But yet they're not saying that out there. They're rubbing our nose in it, you know?
No, the American people, by the way, this is very important. No non-American has any constitutional right to travel to the United States and has no constitutional due process rights to challenge exclusion. And that is firmly established by the Supreme Court. Nobody has a right to come here. No one.
But people have got to understand what you just said. They're not understanding that because that's not what you're getting from the sound bites in the media. And that's not what you're getting from the political class, my friend. It's not happening.
No, I know. What you're getting for the most part is our sob stories, some of which are real,
right.
Some of which are bogus. The fact is, it's impossible for us to generalize because we have no way of vetting these people.
Right.
I mean, we don't even know. First of all, I don't believe that the great majority even fit the criterion of refugees. A refugee is a person who is presently in a dangerous
situation. And that's
situation.
A great point. No, that's a very, very big point. All right, let me ask you this in the last minute and a half we have here. What does America look like, Dr. Steinlein, 50 years from now?
Well, if we're not careful, 50 years from now, we're going to see our population soar. We're going to see the number of people in poverty grow exponentially. We haven't even talked about things like the revolution in robotics. I mean, we have so many things to try to think through in terms of where people are going to be, what they're going to do for a living. We know that it's also not, by the way, environmentally sustainable. The West is a desert. It can only accommodate so many people. This is something that California is now recognizing with the drought that it's experienced. And a lot of Californians, by the way, who really don't like the way things have gone in California as a result of these tremendous, it's kind of the most immigrant-heavy state, have wanted to move out to Colorado. And I remember Governor Lamb, an old friend of mine, Governor Lamb said, we don't have enough water in Colorado.
Listen, I'm running right out of again. Now, all this underscores why it's so important we elect the right officials up there in Washington. But Dr. Steven Steinlein, again, find out more about him at CIS.org. We'll have him on again. I could talk to you.
Malcolm, pleasure. Thank you.
Boy, was that a home run or was that a home run? Dr. Steven Steinlein, got to have him back again. Well, we clearly didn't have enough time to cover everything, but did he bring out some good points or what? I mean, just in that short time, you hear from a brilliant man like that and what he has to say about something like this immigration. And I really do like that organization he's part of, the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. Again, he's a senior policy analyst. If you look him up a little bit more up there, CIS.org is their website. But we'll have him back again for sure and talk more about this because this is a very complicated topic. It's a big subject matter. There's a lot to talk about. He has a lot to peel. And there's things I want you all to understand out there. So, and just break it down. Break it down. Simple, fundamental conversation. How do we fix this? Where are we at? Doesn't mean we're all anti-immigration. It doesn't mean we're all anti-people. It doesn't mean we're all anti-love. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means we need sensible answers to a very complex problem. And obviously, the political class are not solving it. They keep putting it off and putting it off. In the meantime, who's going to pay the price is you and I. That's who's going to pay the price, you and I. So we got to fix this thing. You know, his point back to the Syrian refugees, of course we all have compassion. I have compassion, naturally. I don't want to see this happen to anybody. But the idea is to fix the problem over there. Not to go ahead and bring them out over here. Well, what is that going to accomplish? Then you give the bad guys another ammunition mode to be able to infiltrate this with their bad cast of characters. Not to mention there are so many reasons why it's a bad idea. So you know this whole thing about, oh, Donald Trump said ban them and we can't let them into the country anymore. I mean, that's not what he said. The media immediately took that out of context. What he said. Very simple what he said. He said, we need to put the brakes on for the moment. We need to take a look until we figure out what the hell is going on. And he knew there was a bigger problem here. There is a bigger problem here. Look what they did in Paris. They're already doing it, folks. It's coming to a town or city near you. And then it's going to be a problem, isn't it? When it's on your doorstep, it's a bigger problem. Rest assured. So he's right. Dr. Steinlein is right. Fix the problem over there. Don't infiltrate here. Don't make this more of a problem. We have enough to deal with without more bad guys and gals here. That's for certain. You know, you see what took place in San Bernardino. This is not, this is going to be, it's not an exception. It's going to be the rule. You're going to see more and more of these kinds of attacks happening. So there's a lot of these lone wolves out there and a lot of these copycats and a lot of these radicalized lunatics. And they're playing off the media, the hype, and all of this. That's why I suspect you'll see more and more and more. And it's sad. It's sad when you see the quality of our life go down and you see some of the things that are happening to people. And they're concerned. And, you know, I'm finding people are adjusting their lives. They're adjusting the way they live their lives. It's sad. Very, very sad. And you're seeing areas of our country now that are being decimated with this problem. I mean, you see what's going on in Minneapolis. Go look at what's happening over there. The Somalis and what's happened over there with the Muslim population. Oh, well, you're racist, Malcolm. You're anti this. You're anti that. How can you say that? Folks, wake up. What are you going to do here? Just lie down and let them take it over and then you got nothing but problems. Go ahead. Go read the Quran a moment. Go ahead and read that and let me know how you make out with it, huh? Then come back and tell me what you think. Yeah, hey, everybody is welcome to live the kind of life they want to live. Absolutely. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean I have to live the kind of life you want to live or somebody else wants. That doesn't mean that. I don't have to accept that. That's not American values, the exceptional values that we've just got to take and we've got to take everybody's problems and everybody's challenges because it's American. And if we don't, huh, how dare we, huh? Yeah, no, I'm against this right now. I think this is something we need to look at. I think we need an entirely new immigration policy in this country, both legal and illegal, the entire production. I think we need to secure our southern and northern borders. They're not being secure right now. I think we need to take care of you and I. I think we need to take care of Americans, take care of our children, our grandchildren, the people who are here. What is America? I think we better start waking up, folks, if we're going to have a country left. Better stop taking all of this for granted. There are answers to these problems. I want you to understand that this afternoon. It's not all doom and gloom, my friends. There are answers to the problems. There are. I'm going to share some with you here. You know, one of the interesting answers that I offer, you know, this refugee crisis again, there are ways to fix this. And there are people who care, passionately care. I care. I care. My motive is to help people from around the world. But we have to help ourselves first at home here as well, folks. If we're going to help people around the world, we better have a country left so we can help other people around the world. Does that make sense to you? I hope it does. You know, there's a very, very interesting piece. Very interesting column entitled, How the Ultra Wealthy Are Helping Amid the Refugee Crisis. How the ultra wealthy are helping amid the refugee crisis. You know, if I had a few extra million lying around or a billion or two, I'd be happy to do some of this work. I love this. I love the work Bill Gates is doing around the world. You bet. You bet. I love it. And so when I see the headline on this, I think it's good. So Forbes reported on this, and I want to tell you about it, and the Huffington Post did and others, but it's pretty cool. A new philanthropy report released by WealthX. Now, WealthX is a research firm that donors in the ultra-high net worth, it probably is not you or I, folks, but it's all right. We'll get there someday, huh? But those that are in the ultra-high net worth category have made donating to the refugee situation a priority. Cool. I like it. I always say on my platform, let the private side do more. Yeah, let the private side do more. Government can't fix everything, friends. But the private side, we can do a lot on the private side. Absolutely. So this is kind of cool here. Last year, 7,400 plus, wow, of these high net worth individuals, as they pointed out in this report from WealthX, gave a total just shy of $3 billion. Me hearing a gasp for that. Ah, wow. Almost $3 billion to the refugee crisis. So it's a lot of meat and potatoes, kids. So they're giving money. They're doing things. So it goes on to say many of the ultra wealthy are global citizens with multiple homes and even multiple passports. Now, this is David Friedman, the president of WealthX, told Forbes this. There are people with many countries now trying to help people who currently have no country. It is a global problem, so rightly it should be one they understand and become involved with. I agree with this. You know, Syria should have never became the problem it became. But, you know, again, we ignored this and we let it all go and it's gone to hell in a handbag. And I feel for those people. I feel for those families. I feel for those children. I feel for those women. I feel for those young men. I feel for all of them. I hate what they're going through. Believe me, I do. You know, and an example of some of the people who helped out, the CEO of Chobani, you know that yogurt, Chobani yogurt there? I know they got a lot of publicity back at the Olympics, I remember. They recently joined this, given a pledge. When you give a pledge on this, he agreed to donate at least half of his $1.4 billion wealth to charity. God, I wish he was my uncle or father, huh? But he's doing it. He's putting his money where his mouth is, and that's cool. I have a lot more respect today to report this to you, that Chobani yogurt is it's a good product. I don't know if it tastes good, but I like the philosophy and the mission behind it. Have you tried this Chobani yogurt? Does it taste good? I don't think I've tried that one. I've tried a lot of different yogurts, but I don't think I've tried Chobani. I'll probably go buy some now. I'm going to try it. I will. I promise you. Just based on this, the fact that this man has given half of his wealth over to that, I'll absolutely try his yogurt, man. Why wouldn't I? I hope you do too. That's good. Somebody like this, the philanthropic nature of this, and more companies need to do this. You know? So, you know, they've got here another company, Christopher Cotrambone, founder and chairman of insurance company Tengears Group, is another doing a lot of philanthropic work too. He's made a significant contribution to helping the migrants and refugees out as well. I mean, there's some significant money. There's other folks here. You know, there was I don't know if you remember, there was that hot, wrenching photo of the Syrian boy that went viral about a month or two ago, of the drowned Syrian boy. And donors opened up and they came together and were galvanized in support of this of the efforts here. In a period of about 24 hours, they gave almost 300,000, well over 275,000, they're saying. That's cool. That's cool. We need to see more of the private side do more of this and give more away. So, you know, that's the story. I mean, we've all got to do more. And here's the ultra wealthy doing it. We can all do a little bit, folks. We can all donate a few bucks or help out. There is some hope out there, and people do care and have passion. Well, that's a wrap, folks. It's been a great conversation. I hope you learned something this afternoon on immigration. My thanks to Dr. Steven Steinlight and all his work and effort here. Awesome. And we'll do it again next time. Remember, get involved, get loud.